I'm Emily, and welcome to the 8th episode of Grounders. I'm sure everyone is super happy the 100 is back, and there certainly has been a lot of excitement and controversy since its return. Starting off, we'll jump straight into the news that can be located on the website, as always, at www.groundersource.com. At the start of the month, we learned that the 100 was thankfully renewed by the CW for Season 3. Congrats to the cast, crew, and writers! A new trailer for the second half of Season 2 was released, and it's pretty cool. Some standout parts in it include Jasper holding a sword to President Dante's neck, and Clark telling Abby, "You might be Chancellor, but I'm in charge." Damn, girl. Check out the trailer on the website or our Twitter page. The synopsis for the next three episodes of The 100 have been released. First up is Coup de Grâce, the 11th episode in Season 2, airing next week. Clark and Abby face off. Bellamy and Lincoln's attempt to sneak into Mount Weather has brutal consequences. Abby fights to stay in control as Clark steps up in her new leadership role. Meanwhile, with Monty and Harper still missing, a desperate Jasper confronts President Wallace and demands answers. And we'll just take a quick listen to the trailer for the episode here.
Harvest them all.
You should be back by now.
They'll be okay.
Your whole plan rests on Bellamy getting in.
Looks like Bellamy is in trouble, guys. The next synopsis is for the 12th episode entitled Rubicon. Choose your path wisely. Tensions between Clark and Abby come to a head after Clark crosses the line. Raven helps Bellamy navigate Mount Weather. Jaha and Murphy encounter a stranger who may not be what she seems, and Octavia is prepared to fight for someone she loves. Meanwhile, things reach a breaking point in Mount Weather. Alright, so we kind of knew that Clark and her mom were going to come to a head just because of the Season 2 trailer. So Bellamy, of course, is going to be alright. I think fans would probably lose their crap if he wasn't okay, but this just proves that he's going to be perfectly fine and that Raven's going to help him out. And the person that Octavia is going to be fighting for, I think everyone would already know that it's going to be Lincoln, especially after seeing him in the last episode. We saw him shoot up again with the red drug. So she's gonna have to save his life and make him not a Reaper anymore once again. So lastly, the synopsis for the 13th episode entitled Resurrection goes like this. Don't forget that we're the good guys. Clark begins to question Lex's leadership decisions. Abby struggles to help an injured Kane. Indra continues to push Octavia. Meanwhile, at Mount Weather, Jasper steps up into the role of leader, and Cage throws Maya into a life-threatening situation. Ooh, Jasper's gonna have to save her. Let me see. So, I think everyone always questioned Lex's leadership decisions. I don't think that this is a new thing, but we'll see how that goes. Moving on to the recaps, as always, these are located at www.groundersource.com. The first one is for the 9th episode in Season 2 of The 100, entitled Remember Me. The show starts and my heart is immediately already broken by Clark's hyperventilating sobs as she attempts to scrub Finn's blood off her hands. Abby tries to console her, but isn't much help. Lexa comes in and sits on her throne with Gustus and Indra. She tells Clark some grounders believe that Finn's death was not enough justice because he did not die by their traditions. However, Lexa believes it was enough because, as she puts it, what you did tonight will haunt you until the end of your days. And it literally is, because Clark is seeing Finn everywhere. One last thing, though. Lexa wants to bring Finn's body to the village of the people he slaughtered. Kane and Abby try to fight it and say Finn should be buried with his own people, but Clark quickly agrees with Lexa. She tells Abby she needs this truce to be held up or killing Finn was for nothing. One of my favorite exchanges in the episode comes after this between Kane and Abby. Abby says, "They're being led by a child," to which Kane responds, "So are we." Thank you, Kane. I've only been yelling at you every episode. No adult can handle being a leader on the ground. That's not to say that any kid can. We already see that Clark is kind of growing cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But out of everyone, she's probably the most qualified and the only one that has the knowledge and experience to be leading them. The Grounders and the Sky People all embark to the Grounder Village with Finn's body. Raven is pissed as hell at Clark. Clark is still hallucinating as she saw Finn's eyes open when they took his body and is also seeing him in the forest. On the way there, a moment is had between Clark and Bellamy that had Bellark fans in a tizzy. Bellamy says they're wasting time and he should be going into Mount Weather to be an inside man. Clark says, no way. And Bellamy is like, well, you aren't the boss of me. Clark in turn responds, I can't lose you too. A moment is also shared between Gustus and Lexa, in which Gustus says that this alliance will kill Lexa. They get to the camp, and Gustus takes all their weapons from them, including Raven's. The Grounders are pissed. They're there, however, and Gustus ends up beating one of them to a pulp. Lexa's like, you all better chill. They set up all the bodies, and Lexa gives Clark the task of lighting them on fire, something that seems to be an honor, because the Grounders' eyes look like they're about to pop. Clark says your fight is over in Grounder language, and this also causes the Grounders to look at her in shock. Lexa and Clark have a moment after the ritual where Lexa tells her the story of someone she loved, a woman, who the Ice Nation kidnapped, tortured, and beheaded in an attempt to get Lexa's secrets. Awesome to have the first LGBT character on the show, and in love with the fact it is Lexa. And I wonder who the Ice Nation is. Canada? Because I am definitely freezing my butt off up here right now. Lexa tells Clark plainly, love is weakness, and there's no place for weakness when you are the leader of your people. After all this, the Grounders and Sky People have a feast to celebrate. Kane even brings some alcohol. He gives it to Lexa, who says she will share it with Clark. She pours them both a glass and has Gustus try hers first, which is something that they did for like the royal family and stuff because they want to know if it's poison so they would die instead of the royal family member. So, Gustus falls over and the Grounders yell, poison, and just like that, the alliance is over, everyone is ready to fight, and the Grounders determine that the only person who would want Lexa dead is Raven, and Indra finds poison in Raven's coat. The Grounders lock all the Sky People in the room while they go to determine their fate. Octavia tells Lincoln to do something, and he tries to talk to Indra, saying, let me speak for them, to which she responds, you are them. Ouch. And that's when shenanigans hits the fan. Clark tries to ask Raven if she did attempt to murder Lexa, and Raven responds by punching her and yelling, you're the only murderer here. I get that Raven is grieving and in pain, but Clark lost someone too, and this is kind of pushing her over the breaking point. It's heartbreaking to see the weight already on Clark's shoulders from Finn's death get heavier. Clark hallucinates Finn again and yells at him to leave her alone, and he shouldn't have gone to the camp. Raven just stares in disbelief as Clark runs away to a corner. Abby goes to comfort her daughter and tells her she understands, the meaning behind this statement being she also killed the man she loved, Clark's father. So Clark erupts at this statement, saying that killing Finn was the only option, it was nothing like what happened between her mom and her dad. Then she comes to the realization that her mother and her are in fact similar, and it looks as though this makes her disgusted with herself. Gustus is saved, and the Grounders come back. They have decided they will kill Raven, and everyone else will be set free. However, the peace truce is off, and as Indra puts it, they better run. The Sky People watch as Raven is tied to a tree, and the Grounders take turns slicing into her with a knife. Clark is hallucinating Finn again, and Abby is screaming at her that they need to run before the Grounders are done with Raven. Clark suddenly has a moment of clarity looking at the goblet that is at Finn's feet and runs outside. She tells the Grounders to fetch her the flask and chugs it for like a while in front of Lexa. Can't blame the girl for needing some alcohol. Clark is fine and tells Lexa that the poison wasn't from their alcohol, it was from Lexa's goblet. Bellamy realizes it was Gustus who did the deed, as he would do anything to protect Lexa and he was worried the Alliance would kill her. Lexa asks Gustus if this was true and he tells her it is. They then take Raven down and tie Gustus to the tree, who is sliced again and again by his own people. I said on our Twitter page I thought that after Raven was put in the same position as Finn was, she might forgive and understand Clark, and it happened. As Gustus tells Lexa be strong, she puts the final sword in his heart and he dies. And that, like, I did not see any emotion on her at all, which definitely, that is the love is weakness thing coming into play, because she did not show any feelings as she put that sword in his heart. I thought when he said be strong to her, she might like show a glimmer of emotion, and she was just totally stone faced. And with that, Clark understands that she must be strong too. Love is weakness. She goes to Bellamy and the gang and says he is right. He needs to break into Mount Weather. One of the radio waves is working and playing a distress signal from the 47. There is no time to waste. He's confused because she seems so cold, and Raven and O stare at her like she's lost her mind. But she gives Belle what he needs and sends him off. I don't really like Heartless Clark at all. She sends Finn's hallucination away, too, into the darkness. And that's not really gonna work, because when you cover a mental illness like that, you're probably just gonna come out crazier. As she follows Lexa into her lair, Abby watches, and you can tell that she just knows that she's watching her daughter walk into a darkness as well, and that she's basically losing her daughter, like you see it on her face. She's totally hopeless. And all the while this is all happening, all episode, the 47 is in Mount Weather, and they've been like, where the heck is Harper? Maya has now totally joined their little squad and totally has googly eyes for Jasper. The gang smashes in a wall, so they set an alarm off, and they find some wires that lead to the radio system. They go to hack in and send a distress signal, except, of course, the radio waves are jammed. We knew this, the 47 didn't. Monty gets a looped message to play, but he needs to get to the control room to allow it to broadcast. He breaks in and gets the message out, and then dresses up in one of the Bubble Boy suits to sneak out. He almost escapes, but Cage and another security guard catch him leaving. The guard gets him to sign a coat, but it isn't the right one, leading the guard to the realization Monty isn't who he thinks he is. He chases him down and strangles him until he loses consciousness. Monty then wakes up in a cage and looks up. Harper is half dead above him, and tells him that there are 47 cages, one for each of them. Not good. Next up, we have the recap for episode 10, Survival of the Fittest. Of course, you can always read this on the website, www.groundersource.com. And this was written by Evelyn Ehrlich. What doesn't kill you only makes you stronger is the dynamic for this week's blood-curdling and heart-pounding episode, Survival of the Fittest. Okay, we start off with Bellamy and Lincoln in the forest, Lincoln painting himself with animal blood and limestone to keep out the Reaper appearance. They are on their way to Mount Weather. Bellamy is completely decked out in grounder gear, learning and taking in all the information Lincoln is discussing with him in order to save the rest of their people. Belle is getting worried about running into Reapers, but apparently all these guys see is red, the drug. I felt horrible for Lincoln, and I can only pray that he is strong enough to fight the after effects. The blossoming bromance between the two is astounding, because when they first met, it wasn't exactly brotherly love. Bellamy tells Lincoln that he made his beloved sister strong, but asks for the reason Lincoln protected his sister before he even knew her. We learn a little bit more of Lincoln's childhood through his response. He saw a broken man dropped from the sky in a small pod. Lincoln gave him food and water, and 3 days later, he killed him under his father's orders. He says that his people wanted to make him into a monster, and Octavia was basically his way of rebelling against that. When speaking of their Cerberus experiment, Bellamy recalls how their mother read Greek mythology, and Octavia basked in it. With this bit of new information, we learn the reason of why Mount Weather gave the dreadful, inhumane cruelty with its name. Cerberus is the guard of the underworld, and that is exactly what Mount Weather is on. Oh, I can only hope that the boys are not in there for long. At Camp Jaha, Kane welcomes Indra and the rest of her people. They are going to be trained to take on the Mountain Men. However, Jaha doesn't approve of this. While he is not Chancellor anymore, I do have to say that I agree on his point of view. Kane's deluded ideals of sharing the ground after the war reminded me of how the very first English settlers made it in America, and we all know what happened after that. A fight breaks out inside the station, started by one of the groundermen, and he antagonizes Murphy. You never antagonize John Murphy, by the way, unless you want trouble. While Clark and Lexa are concocting plans for the best way to defeat Mount Weather, Quint, one of Lexa's generals, says he doesn't want anything to do with the Alliance. Lexa shuts him up and continues on with Clark, agreeing they will work together to help both sides of their people. Both of these young women are strong and smart and will come through. They have put differences aside to reach that common goal of rescue. Clark heads out into the forest unarmed, and the bad grounder, Quint, is right below her. He starts shooting arrows at her and she runs for dear life. She is relieved to see Major Byrne, but unfortunately Byrne is in very bad shape because someone or something amputated her arm by the shoulder. Before she collapses to the ground and perishes, she breathes out softly to Clark, "Save yourself." It was uncertain of what or who killed her, and I believe that many answers are feasible. It could have been Quint, or something we have not seen yet. Quint comes along again, "Seriously, dude, you're starting to creep me out," and attacks Clark. Luckily, Lexa tomahawks her dagger and it pierces right through his arm. Who would have thought that a Grounder commander would come to save her? At this time, Lexa tells Clark that Quint is hers to finish off, but before Clark can make a choice of whether she wants to, a roaring ripples through the trees. Lexa whispers, I think it was like Pona or Puna, I'm not really sure. Lexa slices Quint in the thigh and the woman run off. Back at the camp, Murphy is watching the Grounders fighting from the window inside, where Kane has assigned him work detail. He doesn't like the Grounders for what they did to him in season one. Jaha releases him from the detail, starting a bond between them. At first, Murphy is disgruntled towards the former leader and is very bitter. Throughout their shared time together, Murphy eventually softens a little. They speak of Wells, and it is agreed that Murphy will lead Jaha to his final resting spot. Jaha wants peace and virtue among the people and believes in the concept of sacrificing the few to save the many. While this holds some sort of truth, it doesn't deplete the fact that children were sent down because of some experiment. It also doesn't eradicate the floating of Murphy's father, because he tried to get medicine for his son. Jaha tells Murphy he remembers his father, and then he remembers all of the people he floated. I believe Jaha is breaking apart due to the loss of his song, and some image of the City of Light. He only goes on what the Dead Zone people told him, and this strong faith. He offers Murphy redemption and consolation, and whether or not he accepts it, well, it's up to him. A group of Arkers meet Jaha at the old dropship, and they embark to the City of Light together, and Murphy decides to go with them. One of my favorite scenes in this episode is when Clark and Lexa fight off the mysterious, like, hybrid, whatever, radiative-affected gorilla. Clark is desperately trying to shoot this thing, and the both of them are running through an abandoned zoo. Lexa's guard is killed by the crazy gorilla, and it was quite the gruesome scene. They have to jump off the balcony in order to escape, and Lexa winds up fracturing her elbow. She tries to convince Clark to leave her, but Clark, of course being our Clark, isn't having any of it. She applies a makeshift sling, and while doing so, the topic of how Clark needs to make hard choices to be leader is discussed. Sorry, I just like turned into having a man voice there. Whew. The Grounders believe in the ritual of reincarnation. Lexa tells Clark that when she dies, her spirit will plant itself into the next befitting individual to be commander. Before the conversation continues, the gorilla creature tries to break into the cage. Clark hatches up the perfect plan and releases the animal into the entrapment while she and Lexa get out of there. Will it be secure enough to hold it, though? Octavia finally gets her shining moment when she trains her fighting against Fio. Now, he happens to be built like a damn linebacker, and Octavia is a slip of a thing, but she doesn't let that stop her. Her fighting and spirit are persistent and very empowering. Yet, even with all her tough and gruff, she doesn't defeat him. After she's being treated for her cuts, I notice she got the same cheek scar Bellamy did while fighting Tristan. Indra comes in and tells her that she fought like a child. Her moves were impulsive and uncalculated. Octavia says that she got her ass kicked, and this bemuses the Grounder. However, Indra also said that Octavia's spirit is rare, and that she didn't give up. She makes an offer to Octavia to train her as her second, and Octavia accepts the deal. First rule of training, never question Indra. Sounds like a fair bargain, and I can't wait to see how this will develop. So the Grounders and Sky crew are lining up for a delicious board dinner. Kane also gives Octavia a proposal to get the inside scoop of the Grounders, because he knows so little about them. Why don't you strike up a conversation yourself then, Kane? Don't let someone else do your dirty work. Turns out, though, Octavia refuses because she believes that she is already helping her people and goes to chat with Indra. We are back in the forest with Clark and Lexa. Clark tells Lexa that she has complete faith in Bellamy to get into Mount Weather and help free their people. Then Clark gets inspiration when she hears the gorilla trying to break out of the cage and tells Lexa that there is already an army inside Mount Weather. All someone has to do is unlock the cages, and boom, Mount Weather will be swarmed with Grounders. Lexa, this will work, Clark beams to her. The only possible flaw that I see with this is that what if the Grounders attack the 47? There has to be a lot of conviction in order to persuade the Grounders that everyone is working together in order to have freedom. We will see what happens. The closing of the episode was indeed stomach-clenching. It still brings tears to my eyes. Bellamy and Lincoln are in the mines of Mount Weather. Lincoln backs out from the original plan, saying that he can't go through with it. Bellamy pushes him to go along with it, and there is a Reaper approaching down the tracks. With quick thinking, Lincoln takes Bellamy from behind and puts a knife to his throat. Lincoln and the Reaper exchange a few words, and with a collective sigh of relief, the Reaper goes about his business. We all know that it is staged, but to the outsider it looks brutal and hardcore. Bellamy is then blindfolded, stripped down to his boxers, and led to the examination process. He is marked as Harvest. Again, this is all part of the supposed plan. Here comes the total tear-jerking, heartbreaking part. Lincoln kneels down to get the shot of the red drug. Bellamy has the expression of total despair as he realizes he will be on his own, and the severity of the sacrifice Lincoln has made to get him into Mount Weather sinks in. Bellamy fights with the doctors as they try to pull him up. They knock poor Bell half unconscious and drag him inside, shutting the restricted door behind them. Ooh, so that was pretty intense. I can't wait to see what happens next week. It's going to be a very intense episode. I know there's been a lot of controversy online. a few debates have been on our Twitter page. Some people feel that the guys aren't getting enough screen time. Some people think that it's perfect because it's displaying a lot of girl power. You can always go to our Twitter page and tweet us what you think of the first half of season 2 of The 100. So it's time for the cast and crew other projects. Today I'm talking about Adina Porter, who plays Indra the Grounder on The 100. Adina has been in some really awesome TV shows, namely the popular show True Blood on HBO. True Blood is an American television drama series produced and created by Alan Ball. It is based on the Southern Vampire Mystery series of novels by Charlaine Harris, detailing the coexistence of vampires and humans in Bon Temps, a fictional small town in northwestern Louisiana. The series revolves around Sookie Stackhouse, a telepathic human-fairy hybrid known as a halfling. Sookie is a waitress at Merlot's Bar and Grill, owned by Sam Merlot. Sam is a shapeshifter, though the secret is kept hidden from most of the town. Other characters include Bill Compton, a 173-year-old vampire who has returned to Bon Temps to take up residence in his former home following the death of his last remaining relative, Tara Thornton, Sookie's tough-talking but insecure best friend, Sookie's womanizing brother Jason, the 1,000-year-old vampire and sheriff of Area 5, Eric Northman, and Lafayette Reynolds, a short-order cook, drug dealer, rogue crew member, and medium. The show explores several contemporary issues such as the struggle for equal rights, discrimination and violence against minorities and homosexuals, the problem of drug addiction, the power of faith and religion, the control and influence of the media, and the quest for identity and the importance of family. Adina played Letty Mae Thornton, who is Tara Thornton's abusive, alcoholic mother. She believes her behavior is the result of a demon inside her and begs Tara to help her by getting her an exorcism. After she finds God, she becomes self-righteous and judgmental, even looking down on her nephew Lafayette for being gay. Along with this narrow view comes a dislike for vampires. She wants to make things better with Tara, but only on her terms. So I'm going to play for you guys a trailer for the show, and then right after I'm going to play a clip of Adina Porter as Letty Mae. It'll probably blow your mind. So here we go.
I think Merlot's just got his first vampire.
I think you're right.
What are you?
I can hear people's thoughts.
How could I lose control like that? How come she
did you try that with me? I'm your brother.
May I call on you sometime?
Sure.
You setting up a date with a vampire? What do you have, a death wish?
I'm doing.
A murder in Bon Temps.
Well, why are you surprised?
Now that we got ourselves a vampire.
We're too small a town to be losing girls one after the other like this.
This blood. Is it a life force of a vampire?
Where on earth did you come across V in this town?
Lafayette.
My cousin is dealing vampire blood.
You are not like anybody I ever met.
I don't want to leave this bed.
Let's just screw and do V until we starve.
My mama's passed out on the couch.
I have a demon inside of me. I gotta get it out of me.
By the power of the dog, I bid you depart.
Eric is sheriff of Area 5. We should accede to his wishes.
It would be a great favor if you help us.
Someone's been stealing money from the bar. He's gonna kill me! Who's gonna kill you?
I've been called away, and I need you to watch over Sookie. I also know how you feel about her, and I don't like it.
Sam?
Huh? I'm a shapeshifter.
You murdered a higher life form for the sake of your pet!
You owe us a life.
Miss Jeanette!
That wasn't no exorcism. That was a straight-up con job.
Why don't you come to my home, just till you get things figured out?
Not really just a social worker, are you?
I'm a lot of things.
They keep dying all around me.
Let's start with Amy Burley.
I don't remember what I done. Honest to God, I loved her.
Your intentions were pure. You are a brave soldier, Jason Stackhouse.
No, Phil! You left me alone with no promise to come back, and then you attacked the man who's helping keep me safe? Get out!
How about I give you a ride home and stay with you until Sam gets off of work?
Sucky! We gotta get him out of the light.
And this is my friend Sam.
What the hell are you doing here?
Do you think I wasn't gonna find you? You silly, silly dog.
Why is all the garbage on the side of the garbage?
Oh my God!
You're alive.
I failed you.
You're willing to sacrifice yourself to save me.
We got no reason to hold Stackhouse.
That's horse.
God has given us the ultimate weapon.
Hi, Daddy.
She is extremely annoyed.
We had a deal.
Yeah, well, now the terms have changed.
Bring my car.
Ain't that it over there?
That ain't mine.
Hello? Speaking, who is this? What?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Thornton, but it is against bank policy to extend a loan for an exorcism.
We both know what's going on here. You won't give me a loan because you're a bigot.
Oh, many of our clients are African American.
You say it, that just proves my point. I ain't talking about the color of my skin, but you is.
Well, no, that is simply not the case. We have recently accepted a client who is vampire American.
I don't care who you give loans to, it's not Lady Mae Thornton. You are prejudiced against me because I am a Christian.
What? No, I teach Sunday school.
Uh-huh. Then you know what I'm talking about. The whole world is against us. They even try to take away Christmas. This is your chance to stop that persecution in its tracks. Show Jesus you have a charitable nature.
Well, a bank is not a charity.
Maybe Mr. Gus just don't like women, is that it?
No.
Yes. Unless you and me work something out. My landlord don't mind when I get a little behind in my rent.
So I think we need to terminate this conversation.
There may be snow on the mountaintop, but there's fire in the valley.
What the hell, Mama?
This white devil trying to sexual harass me. I'm gonna sue his narrow ass.
Oh, I assure you, ma'am.
What are you doing here?
Trying to borrow some money, because I got a daughter wanting me to live with a demon inside of me.
Mama, there is no demon. You just have an addiction.
I can feel it in me right now. Nobody believes me! I do not want to live like this no more! I can't!
So if you haven't seen True Blood, that probably just blew your mind. Total opposite character of Indra, Adina is clearly an incredible actress. Alright everyone, that's it for the 8th episode of Grounders. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember to visit the website at www.groundersource.com. Follow us on Twitter at Groundersource or drop us a line at the podcast email, grounderspodcast@gmail.com.